Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
Hey everybody, what is up? Happy Tuesday. Welcome back to the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network, FTN Daily, FTN Fantasy, FTN Bets, the entire network. We're glad to be here. The NBA is crazy right now. My name is Adam Pfeiffer. Joe Metz not with me today, but I am really happy to bring on one of the heads of our NBA content team, Stefano Vaccarino, who you've seen write the game-by-game article. You've seen him. He's the one of the main guys of the awesome NBA Advanced EVP tool, and he's just a huge part of what we're doing here at FTN. So, Stefano, what's going on? Thanks for joining the pod. And how did you survive Monday's madness?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on, Adam. I think Joe just got scared about like what happened on Monday, based off all the craziness. So he decided to take the day off, right? Or, like, we can't kind of let him off the hook right here, right? Like, this is a cop out.
Yeah, I don't blame him though, and I didn't envy him having to do the game by game and then having it just get completely ripped to shreds by Monday afternoon. It was absolutely insane. And luckily for Tuesday, we have a lot of news prior. We're still waiting on some things, but I mean, you just look across the board, a ton of big names are out. And with this being the last week before the playoffs, I mean, teams are kind of locked into seeds. We're going to see a lot of guys rest. So, you know, not the NBA is always the main sport where you need to be around your computer before lock more than any others, but it's especially true now. Also, especially since, you know, we have games starting at 1 or 2 in the afternoon. But, you know, real quick before we get started, because Joe and I have touched on a lot of this stuff, but, you know, can you talk about some of the stuff that, you know, we are pushing it with FTN Daily and FTN NBA and just FTN as a whole? Because myself and Joe have talked about it, and I've talked about it with Debro on the NFL podcast, but, you know, you have been a lot more behind the scenes for sure than I have. So from your take, I mean, just how awesome and exciting is this stuff right now?
Yeah, definitely. So you touched on the Advanced MVP tool a little bit. That's a bit of my baby. You know, it kind of stemmed from, you know, the fact that the NBA has changed, right? But our data hasn't really changed. And, you know, as the NBA becomes positionless, why are we weighing positions heavily when making a decision in DFS? So, you know, we basically, you know, we value traits, and instead of valuing how do shooting guards do against a certain team, we value how scorers do, or how primary ball handlers do, or how individual players do based off their traits. Like, you know, why should I use this one as this is the perfect example. I use it all the time, so you probably heard me say it before. But why should J.J. Redick and James Harden be characterized as the same? Like, they're different players. They play the same position, but like it's not the same matchup for both players. So that, in its essence, is what Advanced EVP is. It truly tells you what the best matchups of the day are for. It's also can be used for sports betting and player props, and that we're actually working on a sports betting version of it to kind of identify the key matchups for individual props. We're also going to release soon a on-off splits tool, which I'm really excited about. And, you know, this is a tool that's in the industry that other people have. But what will be unique about our tool is we're actually going to identify the difference between when a player is off the court and when a player plays 0 minutes. Because there is a real difference between the two. You know, Joel Embiid off the court in games that he plays is different for the Sixers than it is in games Joel Embiid just doesn't play at all. And so we'll actually have the real data of the on-off court splits and use it in like a more, I guess, relevant way. So I'm really excited about that one. It's a really clean interface and user experience. I'm hoping that one will be live in about a week. We're just kind of finishing up the final touches, so it's perfect.
Yeah, I've been doing NBA content for a while, but the Advanced EVP tool is like my favorite thing of all time. I love it. It's really reminds me of like NBA 2K with, you know, player traits and builds and how these players can use their trait or whatever to take advantage of matchups. So,
and that's done on purpose. I mean, that's a perfect example. Like the dimer trait is exactly like that comes kind of, that the inspiration was from 2K, because, you know, how do we describe this type of player? And that's, you know, people can relate to it. And it's fun. The whole point is, like, it's a super complicated tool on the back end that is made incredibly easy to digest for users. And that's kind of what I'm most proud about of it.
Like JJ Barea and I don't know, Jordan Clarkson, they play the same position. They can play the one or the two at times, but they're completely different players. JJ Barea would have more of a dimer kind of trait, whereas Jordan Clarkson would be more of a scorer. So that's why it's just so fun to look at. And you can, there's like 10 to 15 different traits on there, so I love it. Let's get to this slate, though. 7 games, first game kicking off at 1 p.m. It's Brooklyn and Orlando, and Stefano, everybody's out. I mean, the Magic already without Jonathan Isaac. Now Aaron Gordon, he's been dealing with the hamstring. He's doubtful. Evan Fournier's sick. He's doubtful. Terrence Ross now away from the team. He won't be playing. And Michael Carter-Williams is doubtful. So you're going to see a really shorthanded Orlando team. And then Brooklyn is resting a lot of their guys, and they have some injuries. Obviously, they're already shorthanded coming into the bubble, but no Caris LeVert, no Jared Allen, no Joe Harris, and no Garrett Temple. Let's start with Orlando here. I mean, Vucevic is obviously the main cog here. You know, when this team's healthy, and for sure he will be here, 8,600 in a good matchup. But then Markelle Fultz is a guy who, when if they're missing Ross, Fournier, I mean, they can play more Augustine and Fultz lineups together. And Augustine's more of a pass-first guard, so I think Fultz could still get plenty of usage. He does see he actually sees a 23% rebounding rate with those guys off the floor, which, you know, he's a quietly solid peripherals guy. So thoughts on Orlando here as they are just massively, massively shorthanded.
So I think we have to start the conversation with Vucevic, right? It's Nets. It's bigs against the Nets. And Vucevic is basically the only he's not the only Orlando starter. There's Fultz and Augustine, but he's really the main source of offense coming for Orlando. And with Ross, Fournier, and Gordon off the floor, I'm actually getting the exact number right now, but Vucevic is a 1.42 DraftKings fantasy point per minute producer, and that's up there with the Embiid, kind of like a standard Embiid who's like in the 1.5, 1.6 range. And we're getting Vooch at under 9K on DraftKings. And so we really have to, you know, ask the question, like, do we think Vooch is going to see his full minutes? I personally do think he does see his full minutes. There's nothing to indicate that he hasn't, that he'll see reduced minutes since being in the bubble. I actually think this game has, like, a little bit of meaning between the 7 and 8. I don't think either team really cares what position they're in, but I do think they're going to give it a full go. Vooch is kind of the first person in my lineups tonight. It's like, it's hard to fade him. It's the Nets.
That's saying something, too, because we're going to get to Houston in a little bit. I love Vucevic, though, just in general.
That's one and two, to be honest. When we get to Houston, it's Westbrook and Vucevic. It's kind of starting your night there. And his floor is 40 in this matchup against a Nets team that just won't be able to guard him. The offense is going to run through him. It's interesting that he actually carries a primary ball handler trait on advanced EVP, which means like he's really getting a ton of touches for Orlando. He's like one of my priorities to start the night. And it's the floor ceiling combo for Vooch in like an elite matchup. While seeing a usage bump is just hard to ignore for me. Yeah. I want to touch on Fultz. Fultz is too cheap. If I'm targeting another Orlando player, and I likely am because the Nets matchup is elite, it's Fultz. I know a lot of people are going to rush to James Ennis, and Ennis is also a really strong value. Nothing against playing three Magic players. If I'm prioritizing two, it's Vucevic and Fultz. They have the highest ceilings, and I'm willing to kind of chase those ceilings in a Nets matchup.
Yeah, they're pretty much the same price. I think he and DJ Augustine are going to play together a lot, so their minutes should be similar. But, I mean, DJ Augustine does see a nearly 5% usage bump with those guys off the floor. But, as I mentioned, Fultz is rebounding the ball relatively well, and there's just not a lot of rebounders on the floor right now for this team. And you mentioned Ennis, and then, like, I don't think we're going to need enough. I don't think we're going to need value enough to even go to, like, Wes Iwundu. Wes Iwundu sees a plus 6.5% usage rate with those guys off the floor, but he's still, like, an incredibly low usage player. And he's, like, no ceiling. So, yeah, I agree. It's definitely Vucevic, then Fultz for me. Then if you want to sprinkle in Augustine or James Ennis, I have no problem with that. Let's go to Brooklyn. I mean, they're really shorthanded, too. You're going to see no LeVert, no Allen, no Harris, no Temple. Who stands out the most? I mean, we have Kurucs, TLC, Chioza. These guys are all going to get, you know, a bump in production, usage, minutes, everything.
So, as we saw, like, the Bucks in this scenario, like, against the Bucks in this scenario, the Nets kind of played a bunch of guys between, like, 24 and 28 minutes. I don't think a single Net's going to touch over 34, 35 minutes. I think the majority of people are going to go Chioza. Tyler Johnson just hasn't looked good in the bubble. The minutes are there. His last game was the first game he, like, kind of shot well. I guess against Sacramento, he was okay shooting the ball, but I haven't been a fan of Tyler Johnson. When he was on Miami, what he did so well was producing the peripherals. He would grab boards. He would kind of get a bunch of steals. He's kind of turned into, like, a spot-up shooter that's not really hitting his shot. So at 5,100 on DraftKings, I'm kind of like, I get it. I'm just not in love with it.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in Jeremiah Martin. I think this is a really strong GPP, just like dart throw. He's been one of the better point per minute producers in the bubble. He got 20 minutes against Milwaukee. He put up 20.25 DraftKings points. He got 16 minutes against Boston, put up 29 DraftKings points. I think he's going to be in the 20 plus range. I think the Nets have liked what he's done on the floor in his limited minutes. This is a really kind of interesting opportunity to get a low owned kind of punt with Martin. You know, we talked about Iwundu. Iwundu has, like, that incredible minutes for it. Like, he actually might play like 38, 39 minutes tomorrow.
Yeah, because they'll play him at the 4 and the 3. It doesn't matter. Yeah,
but the point is he doesn't do anything in those minutes. And, like, I would rather target 20 – I would say I'd rather target 18 minutes of Jeremiah Martin than 35 minutes of Wes Iwundu. And I'm being a little – I'm probably being a little optimistic with Martin, but he's really impressed me. Like, he's active on the floor. He doesn't really pass the ball much. He's looking to score, and he's scored pretty well. I also think, like, he's going to be playing against – he's not just playing against the Magic backup. He's kind of playing against their third stringers because they don't really have – like, their backups are actually their starters now. So, like, his production off the bench is going to be, like, really strong. I actually also wouldn't be shocked if he got a spot start. So Martin's a really cheap kind of punt that I'm interested in. Kurucs is, like, fine. I think he's – like, I don't love the spot for him. I don't really like targeting bigs against Vucevic. A big reason why is because he commands so much usage.
Yeah.
He kind of pulls bigs away from the rim, and so I think Kurucs, not that he's like an interior defender or a big time rebounder, but, you know, he's just going to be kind of away from the rim too much, where he's mostly kind of playing defense against Vucevic, so he'll see, like, limited defensive or rebounding opportunities. Donta Hall is another kind of punt that I think will actually carry some ownership. He's been a good per minute producer, except last game where he played 6 minutes and had minus 0.5 fantasy points. The worry with Hall is he might pick up 5 fouls in 4 minutes against Vucevic. Right. But they're going to need his size. He's cheap. He should play. I don't mind the punt. To be honest with the Nets, though, like, this, like, as much value as they kind of have, there's better value on this slate where I'm not looking to force anyone in. I don't trust Luau Cabarrot's production. I know he's played pretty well in the bubble. Orlando's a slow-paced team. This isn't the greatest game environment.
Yeah, that's the thing. Orlando plays so slow, and I think they could play even slower now because all their, like, Terrence Ross and Fournier are guys that are going to shoot early in possessions. Like, I think they could play even slower. Aaron Gordon, you know, a guy you want to get in transition. Vucevic is a guy that posts up a lot. Like, I think they could legitimately play even slower in this game. I think TLC has the best, maybe the best projection for, like, the best chance to get, like, over 30 minutes. But I also agree, like, I'd rather take a shot on Martin at 3,400 than Chioza at 4,400 if they're going to play somewhat similar minutes, especially because I just don't love the pace for Orlando. And they're, you know, even without these guys, they're still, you know, solid defensive team. Like, they're missing a lot of their best defenders, but, yeah, the pace is still going to be pretty gross.
Yeah, and, like, so Chioza's, like, I like Chioza. Like, I should have kind of started with him because he's probably the most relevant net. And, you know, 4,400 is a great price. He played 31 minutes against the Bucks, and he actually, I'm pretty sure he came off the bench that day. And, you know, he produced like right under a fantasy point per minute. And at 4,400, if he's going to be in that 28, 32 minute range, you'll take that. The problem I have is, you know, the Bucks are a legit pace up spot, and he was playing against the Bucks backups for the entire second half. And the Bucks backups are still really good, and they're still an elite defensive team. They were not an elite defensive team that day. The Nets did not miss a shot. And, you know, because the Nets didn't miss a shot, he kind of saw, you know, his assists were just high. Like his assists are high because the Nets didn't miss. One stat I'm kind of working on is like there's expected effective field goal percentage, which kind of helps players helps predict players who basically are on a cold streak when they're going to get hot. And part of that I'm also trying to do is expected assist rate. And Chiosa would be kind of a good example for me to test. And that assist rate against Milwaukee is probably sky high than what was expected because the Nets didn't miss a shot. So I think we're going to see some Chiosa regression. And I think the beneficiary of that, again, is Jeremiah Martin. And I just want to be clear, Jeremiah Martin's not like a lock button play. Yeah. This is a legit GPP risk. I think it's a really educated GPP risk that I'm a pretty big fan of.
All right, let's go to another extremely interesting game. Houston against the San Antonio Spurs. We saw James Harden will rest for this game, front end of a back-to-back. The Rockets also going to be without Eric Gordon. And I believe Daniel House is questionable as well. So let's get the obvious out of the way. Russell Westbrook, since the restart, he's over a 39% usage rate, 42% assist rate, 19% rebounding rate with Harden off the floor. Spurs, per the ADVP tool, 27th versus Dimers, 21st for superstars. Russell Westbrook's 9,300. It's kind of a plug and play.
Yep, it's hard to ignore that. The only risk for Westbrook is if we think he's going to see limited minutes because he's coming off an injury. I know you can't see me, but I'm kind of quoting an injury,
right?
Because I think it's more so management, load management, I should say. And Mike D'Antoni doesn't really rest people. That's something that is really important to note. So if you see people saying, like, unless something is actually said from D'Antoni saying we want to limit Westbrook's minutes, we can expect 34 plus minutes out of Westbrook, and at sub 10K without Harden in an elite matchup against the Spurs, put him in. We kind of mentioned it with Vucevic. I'm starting my lineups with Westbrook and Vucevic and then figuring out the rest.
Yeah, and I also, in the in last Wednesday's game-by-game article I did, the Spurs were on the slate, and I talked about how since the restart, they're playing a lot faster because Aldridge isn't there, and Aldridge is always among the league leaders in post-ups per game. So they're playing really, like, I think last time I looked, they were top five in pace since the restart. So it's more enticing with that in that regard, too, because they're playing a lot faster. Let's talk about Austin Rivers, though. I mean, came out and just did not miss in that career game against Sacramento. 41 real points, 60 fantasy points. He's only 4,100, and now no Harden, no Gordon, potentially no House. I mean, it's pretty logical to go back to him here.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about Austin Rivers. I'm not the biggest Austin Rivers fan. He has been a decent per minute producer for fantasy, so I get it. And it, like the past couple of days, I've been saying, and I know Fast Eddie on our team has also been saying it on his live stream a lot, where, you know, McLemore is gonna carry the majority of the ownership. That makes Rivers a decent pivot off of his ownership, and that's exactly what happened last game. The fact is, though, Austin Rivers put up 60 fantasy points last game. That's not going to happen again, and that's going to drive his ownership up. Mm-hmm. And actually, for that exact reason, even though I think he's a really safe play, he's not a priority for me. There's a difference. Like, I'm going to say a couple words. I'm going to say, like, priority, elite play. A priority for me is someone who, like, I'm not really thinking twice about. I don't really care about ownership. An elite play is someone who, you know, it's exactly what it sounds like. This, like, there's no, I can't really say anything bad about him, but I'm also okay fading him. And Austin Rivers is an elite play for me. He's not a priority.
Yeah, plus 4% usage with Harden off the floor since the restart. So, you know, he's obviously a really strong play, but there might be some leverage to go back to Ben McLemore, who's going to see plenty of minutes as well. And I mean, he's taken 29 shots the last two games, so. Wouldn't be the worst idea. I love Robert Covington here. At 6,700, he is always somebody that you never have to worry about minutes. I mean, he's just such a lock for minutes. his rebounding opportunities since joining the Rockets have been up since he's playing a lot more four consistently, maybe some small ball five. His rebounding chances are up by over three per game since joining the Rockets, and this is a good spot. I mean, the Spurs are a pretty bad spot-up defense, second most points per possession allowed to spot-up shooters, fifth highest field goal percentage, and Covington leads the NBA in spot-up points per game, and fourth in frequency. He's over 6 points per game via spot-ups. And the Spurs also rank 23rd against stretch bigs, which is essentially Covington's role. He's obviously not as good of a player or anything as Westbrook, but like I think Covington is, like, just in terms of the spot for him, is really, really good here. And he's easily my second favorite player from this entire game and one of my favorites in the slate. So I don't know if I'm crazy, but I love Covington here.
You're not crazy. He's actually my second favorite player on the Rockets, too. I would actually prioritize spending up a little more on Covington than targeting Austin Rivers or Ben McLemore. And another interesting note, you mentioned 23rd against stretch bigs, which you beat me to it. I was just going to say that. But this, like, he doesn't carry the rim protector trait, but he is like a semi-rim protector for the, for the Rockets. And though like a player doesn't have that trait, he might not qualify for that trait. Some players are like kind of on the cusp, and Covington would probably be on the cusp of being a rim protector, and the Spurs ranked 27th against the rim protector. So we're kind of getting that defensive upside with that, you know, the Spurs leave their bigs open. They collapse the paint, and that will leave Rocco open for a bunch of open threes. So I'm with you. Great play, great price. He's never over-owned, too. I would expect his ownership to probably be in like the 15 to 18% range, considering it's a seven-game slate, which is on the larger side for the bubble.
Yeah.
No issues going Rocco.
If I did like a core five type thing for my article or anything, he would be in it. That's how much I like Covington tonight.
I like it.
Do you think P.J. Tucker hits two of his corner threes? Because if he does, he's probably going to at least meet value.
I can never play P.J. Tucker. I get it. I don't hate it. I just I like to play P.J. Tucker.
He's only center eligible too on DraftKings now, so it's such a bad play.
And center is like the most important position in DFS, in my opinion. Yeah. If you get center wrong, you're kind of screwed. There's just so much production that comes out of the position, especially now when centers like actually carrying the ball. And like the biggest part about playing a cheap center in DFS to me is the first 5 minutes of the first quarter and the first 5 minutes of the third quarter. Mm-hmm. The start of both halves is when those cheap centers kind of go off because defense is kind of lackluster and teams want to get their bigs the ball early to get them engaged to be aggressive on the glass and to be a rim protector. That doesn't happen with P.J. Tucker. P.J. Tucker is going to hustle on defense. He's going to do what he has to do, and he's going to sit in the corner on offense. And if the ball comes to him, he's going to take an open shot. You know, he's a really good corner three shooter, but it's not too relevant in DFS. I understand it. He's cheap, but I actually prefer playing P.J. Tucker when both Russell Westbrook and James Harden are playing, not when one is off the court.
I prefer him more when Harden's playing and Westbrook's out rather than Westbrook playing and Harden's out, because Westbrook's more of an aggressive rebounder than Harden, and he can steal a lot of Tucker's rebounds. Plus, Westbrook, they're both going to drive and kick a lot, but needless to say, I don't really want to play P.J. Tucker, especially as he's only center eligible. Let's go to the Spurs. Brent Forbes is not going to make his debut in the bubble. Derek White is questionable. I mean, if Derek White sits, we'll see a lot of DeJounte Murray, which is, I mean, it's huge for these guys being hurt because the Spurs always use four of those guys, and they're, you know, it's hard to get them right between Murray, White, Forbes, and Patty Mills. And then, of course, DeMar DeRozan kind of leading the way. He's 8K on DraftKings. I have some interest in him. Rockets, bottom eight in field goal percentage allowed at the rim. DeRozan's still third in the NBA in drives per game. Thoughts on the Spurs here?
Yeah, they're interesting. The Derek White news is important. Mm-hmm. It's really important because if White's out, that's going to open up that opens up a significant amount of usage for not just DeMar DeRozan but also like Rudy Gay. And I was disappointed but also surprised to see that when White went down last game against the Pelicans, we really saw it just become the DeMar DeRozan Rudy Gay show. And I was expecting Murray to kind of take over. I also played Murray in my single-entry teams over White at lower ownership as a pivot against the Pelicans, so just a little biased to my disappointment. But needless to say, like that actually happened, right? And I think we can expect that to happen again. The issue I have with DeMar DeRozan is his minutes have been down in the bubble, and I don't think that's a coincidence. I mean, Pop has said he wants to go younger in the bubble. He's using the bubble as a way to get his younger players involved. I mean, that's Rudy Gay and DeMar DeRozan dominating the second half when Derek White went out. So I'm really on the fence about the Spurs. Like, there's significant value if Derek White's out. I think I'm going to lean Murray as my favorite Spurs to target if that happens. I'm worried about it.
This does seem like a DeJounte Murray game, too, against a really, really, really high usage, fast pace, often, you know, sloppy Russell Westbrook. Like, he could get a lot of steals in this game, which, you know, you don't really project for steals. But DeJounte Murray is a guy that will get a lot of those peripherals. And, again, if Derek White's out, I mean, the minutes should be solidified and the usage should be higher than it has been. So I think I'm with you. I think he is my top guy right now, assuming White's out. Like, DeRozan's not, like, egregiously priced or anything if you want to go to him. And Rudy Gay's, like, been playing pretty well lately. So, it's tough. And then who knows what you're getting from the front court if you even want to go there on a seven-game slate, which seven-game slate, like you said, doesn't sound like a lot, but considering the bubble, it's been, like, four- and five-game slates, it is a lot.
Yeah, it's for lack of a better word, it's really annoying that Rudy Gay is playing well, because I don't want to consider him. Like, I don't want him to be a part of this at all. I want Rudy Gay to be playing his, like, 18 to 22 minutes, putting up his, like, 18 to 22 fantasy points, not going, like, 30, 30, 40 in his last three games or whatever it is. And if Rudy Gay is carrying that significant ownership, that's going to have an effect on guys like DeJounte Murray. And I like the matchup. The Rockets play faster when Harden's not in and it's just Westbrook. So this is, like, a really good game environment. I just – the production has been, like, weird with the Spurs. And I think it all stems with Rudy Gay.
Anybody else from San Antonio?
I'm off on the bigs. I think Poeltl is, like, fine. I actually think Eubanks is fine as, like, a punt. I think we see them kind of go small with, like, Rudy Gay at the five, though, for stretches. Yeah. And I feel like I'm just making a point to play Rudy Gay.
Firstly, he's been playing well, and the usage is, like you said, the usage just went to him and DeRozan. And if he's going to play some small ball five, he could get 8-9 rebounds in this game. Just maybe Rudy Gay is the play.
Yeah. The stocks are a little misleading on Gay, though. I mean, he had what? Yeah, he had three steals the past two games. He had three steals each of the last two games. He had three steals and a block last game. It is the right game environment to pick up some of those, like, peripherals. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really good value on this slate, and it's hard for me to get to Rudy Gay. If I'm playing 20 max contests, I'm going to have some Rudy Gay exposure. If I'm paying 150 lineups, I'm definitely going to have Rudy Gay exposure. I'd probably want to go a little overweight. I would expect him to be in, like, the 10 to 15% owned range. I would probably want to be in, like, the 18 to 19-20% just in case this game blows up. He will have an impact.
All right, cool. The best team in the NBA, the Phoenix Suns, against the deplete. They're not really depleted because it's two guys, but it's their two best players. But now they're just like, hey, nobody's playing. But the Philadelphia 76ers. What the hell do we do with the Sixers? No Embiid. Simmons done for the year. No Josh Richardson. No Al Horford. Maybe no Tobias Harris.
Alec Burks.
Yeah, that's the correct answer.
I want Alec Burks. I think Shake Milton's also really interesting. We saw kind of what Shake was doing before the NBA was suspended. It was like kind of like, oh, shit. Am I allowed to curse on here? Sorry.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, Shake Milton. Like, you know, I didn't realize you were good at basketball. And, you know, he's been a decent, like, permanent producer. He has been a bad permanent producer in the bubble, though. That said, they are probably not going to have anyone. I don't think Tobias Harris is going to play. I don't think Al Horford's going to play, even though both are listed as questionable. I will say if one of the two play, especially Tobias Harris. If Tobias Harris plays and no one else is playing, Tobias Harris is a elite target.
He's going to take basically
every shot. Yes, and he's under 9K. 8,500 on DraftKings might feel expensive. It's not in this scenario. I don't think Horford's going to play. I think that's
I saw a Sixers beat guy say he's out, and then I've seen questionable, but yeah, okay. I think he has like a 1% chance of playing.
And that leaves us with the always fun Kyle O'Quinn, North Pelé kind of argument. Dude, I'm a Kyle O'Quinn guy. I'm probably going to play him if Horford's out.
At I'm going to play Pelle.
Starts. Yeah, whichever one starts, to be honest. And starting is kind of overrated in the NBA now, but I do view it for centers. Like I said, like that first five of each half, that is some sort of floor for a starting center. And at 3K, I'm probably going to pick the one that starts and just kind of run with it. I hope it's O'Quinn because it's more fun to play O'Quinn. It's also more fun to complain if Kyle O'Quinn picks up 4 fouls in 3 minutes. The Sixers provide good value. That's it at the end of the day. Alec Burks kind of leads the charge. I think Matisse is, like, okay.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Matisse because Brett Brown came out today and said he's excited to see Matisse cover Devin Booker. So, and the Suns, they keep winning, but they have to keep winning. So Booker's going to be on the floor as much as they need him to. And, I mean, Matisse, if he has to play 35, I mean, he's going to play more minutes regardless, but especially if they want to match up against Booker. Now, we know his offensive game is limited right now, and his usage, even with these guys out, you wouldn't expect him to have a huge usage rate. It's going to go to mainly Shake Milton and Alec Burks, but he's a guy that can, I mean, he had 9 rebounds in that last game. Obviously, that was, helpful that Embiid was out, but Embiid's not coming back this game. Neither is Ben Simmons. Al Horford's probably going to be out, so I don't see how you could say that any of these guys are out of consideration. Glenn Robinson's 3,800, but I just would rather play Matisse Thybulle because I know he's going to play more minutes. Alec Burks is probably going to, like, if Tobias sits too, Burks is taking 20 shots without question. They just don't have.
So I like Matisse.
Go ahead.
I like Matisse a lot. Sorry about that.
No,
I
you're good.
I like Matisse a lot. 3,200. He's going to play 30 plus minutes. Like, what can you ask for? Like, yeah. I don't love the fact that he's going to be the majority of his minutes. Maybe all of his minutes are going to be on Devin Booker. And if Booker, like, there's actually a really good chance that Matisse just matches Devin Booker's minutes and is on him the entire game.
That's what I.
And
that's so that what it sounded like Brett Brown was saying. It sounded like that.
Yeah, and it's a good playoff test for him too. To be honest, he's their best wing defender. So
and like, that's also they what Brett Brown said.
Yeah. So it's like it's a perfect test for him. So guarding Booker will probably lead to less rebounding upside. He's 3,200 though, and if he plays 36 minutes at 3,200, like that's about as good of a that's what you want out of your 3K punts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's hard to fade that. I think Korkmaz is also really interesting at 3K. Mm-hmm. I think people kind of forgot about him, and if he's in that 28 minute range, he'll probably take 10 to 14 shots. 8 of them, 9 of them, probably threes, and he'll probably shoot between 40 and 50%. It's not hard to see how he – it's not hard for him to, like, hit any sort of value, and there's a legitimate ceiling.
Yeah.
So the starting lineup's really interesting for the Sixers. That's what it boils down to. We're going to expect Burks to start, right? We need to know more about Harris and Horford.
Like, if Harris and Horford both sit, what do they start? Shake – Burks, maybe Robinson, Matisse, and either Kyle Quinn or Pelle.
Exactly. That's what I think it would be.
Yeah. So, we will see. Phoenix, they're the best team in the NBA, and they're facing the Sixers, who are depleted, so they're gonna blow them out, right? But, I mean, we saw most of their guys play limited minutes compared to usual because they were well ahead today. Devin Booker is under 30 minutes as he continues to dominate. We had the DeAndre Ayton situation. What do you think of the Suns here? Second of back-to-back, is anybody? It's hard for them to sit, guys, because they have to win.
So we're watching the NBA basketball in August. The best player in the NBA is TJ Warren. Well, maybe not after tonight.
Yeah.
The second best player in the NBA is Michael Porter Jr. And the best team in the NBA are the Phoenix Suns. So everything is fine, right? But so the Suns have motivation to play. And on a slate that has so much minutes uncertainty, what we have in the Suns is minute certainty. And that's really, really, really important. Booker at 8.8K on DraftKings feels expensive. He's also going against a team that is going to play very little defense or has, like, not much defensive talent. That said, Booker draws the worst individual matchup against the Sixers with Matisse likely on him. Not overly concerned about that, though, especially in the modern NBA where teams play with such pace. There's so many cross matchups throughout the course of the game.
Yeah.
So it's not like Matisse is going to be on him every single play. We are getting secure minutes out of Booker, which is important. I view that alone to make him an elite play. He's not a priority, though.
I agree.
Looking to prioritize one Sun, it's probably Ayton.
I agree again.
And I think the Sixers are going to really struggle to just defend his size. I mean, again, we're talking about Pelle and Kyle O'Quinn alternating minutes at center. There's a good chance both foul out. I mean, I wouldn't bet it, but like they're both going to rack up a good chunk of fouls against Ayton. And Ayton continues to have power forward eligibility on DraftKings, which is just absolutely beautiful, which you can kind of make the argument to go 300% center in your lineups. Mm-hmm. And that's rare. That's valuable. Center is probably the most productive position in the NBA. So I love Ayton in the spot. I think the price is great. I think the matchup is great. I'm not interested in what the Suns ADVP is, or the Sixers ADVP is, I should say, against bigs, because this isn't the Sixers. It's the Sixers G League teams. We just don't have the data. And if you just look at the defensive talent, it's not there.
Yeah, Ayton's my favorite. If you want to get to Booker, I have no problem with it. Other than that, though, I mean, you have Saric playing minutes. You have Bridges and Cam Johnson seem to be locked in minutes. Cam Johnson's a higher usage guy than Bridges. Like, Bridges plays so many minutes, but his usage is never high. And then you kind of know what you're going to get from Ricky Rubio. Any of those guys stand out before we go to the next game?
So Cam Johnson's actually really impressed me in the bubble. He's shot the ball really well. His usage is up. He's not a priority for me, but he kind of falls into the category of, like, you're setting your lineup, right, and you're not really sure. Like, you have, like, you're on your last spot, and you have, like, 5,400 or 5,600 or 5,200, whatever it is. And, like, he's kind of, like, last guy in that fits and that I have no issue playing. He's like, his floor has been solid. The minutes are there. I'm a little worried about Rubio. His minutes have been down just because – they've been trending down slightly just because Campaign and Javon Carter have been playing well off the bench. And so they're seeing significantly more minutes, which has an impact on Rubio. Carter at 3,200 is an interesting GPP flyer. If you look at his last two games, he's 10x that price tag. I know that OKC was a blowout, but even in, like, a close game against Miami, he played 26 minutes, had 36 fantasy points. He's back-to-back 30 burgers. 3,200, like, he's not going to carry any ownership on a slate that's loaded with value, but I'm not against kind of targeting Payne here. Carter. Payne, I'm just not really interested in. I don't know. 4K is, like, it's too much for me.
All right. Sounds good. Boston and Memphis up next. We know, obviously, Jaren Jackson Jr. is out. Only other news is Daniel Theis, but he's probable. Other than that, seemed to be good to go from this game. Pace-up spot for Boston. We still have the situation with Kemba Walker's minutes. He played a bubble high, 32 in the last game, was not very productive at all against Orlando, 6,500. Jaylen Brown, 7,100, 7K for Hayward, and then 7,800 for Tatum. I've always for the entire season been a Jaylen Brown fan. I think if Tatum wasn't as good as he's been this year, I think we'd be talking more about how impressive Jaylen Brown's been. He's been, like, one of the most efficient spot up shooters in the league. Solid matchup for him if you look at his traits. Memphis, 21st against scorers, 22nd against crafty finishers. I kind of like him. We know the upside Tatum possesses. Thoughts on the Celtics here?
It's tough. The Celtics are always, like, they're kind of one of the most complicated teams to break down for me every single time they're on the slate. They have so much talent. They have, like, they all kind of eat into each other's production. They're all kind of relatively, expensive. They're not overpriced. They're fairly priced. You're not getting any, like, real value here. I think it's interesting that Tatum is under 8K. At the same time, the Celtics don't really have a ton of motivation. I'm kind of off on the Celtics on this slate, even in a good matchup. It's tough. If I had to prioritize one, it'd probably be Tatum. Number two would be Jaylen Brown. I think Brown is in the bubble has kind of taken it up another notch in terms of, like, I think he considers himself the number two behind Tatum, even, like, ahead of Kemba, even though that's not true. But, we want that sort of confidence in a player when we target in DFS, especially in a pace-up spot against the Grizzlies. Kemba's interesting to me. I like the price. I like the fact that he's going to play 30 to 32 minutes. He's the one Celtic that I actually don't have minutes concerned for, because Brad Stevens has said he wants to get him in playoff shape. He wants to get him in game shape for the playoffs. And so his minutes restriction is actually a good thing in this scenario, where we know he's going to get 30 to 32 minutes. At 6,500 in a plus matchup in a positive game environment against the Grizzlies, I think we can target Kemba here. He just hasn't looked good in the bubble, so that's his risk.
For the Grizzlies, Ja Morant, 8,300. I love Ja Morant, but anytime he's been priced around this range, I've been struggling to get to him. He's I guess in tournaments, but like the matchup definitely isn't great. The price isn't like outstanding either, but it's just, where else do you go? I mean, Valanciunas is 7,200. If he can play, you know, 33, 34 minutes, he's going to be very productive because he's always one of the more efficient point per minute guys in the league. And then you have Dylan Brooks, you know, he's locked in a pretty big minutes right now. His usage has been way higher than I thought it was, especially since the restart. He's been really good since the restart, actually. At least 20 points, real points at least, in three straight games. Never really priced egregiously. The peripherals have been a little bit better, although they're never going to be, you know, incredible for him. Which Grizzlies stand out to you?
I'm 100% with you on Ja Morant, by the way. It's tough for me to get there, especially against the Celtics at 8,300. If there's a game I'm going to fade, it's Memphis-Boston.
Yeah, that's really what I was thinking before we got on, and I wasn't sure because Memphis is a good matchup, but it makes it that much easier to think about fading it when Boston's fully healthy.
Yeah, and you know, Memphis has one thing going for them, and like we should expect – they have minute security, I should say. That's what they have going for them. And, you know, that again, is important. I don't love the matchup. My favorite target would be Dylan Brooks, as you mentioned. He's been, you know, he's continued to shoot the ball well. He's taken a lot of shots. The peripheral production is somewhat up. Do I love it? No, but I think 5,400 is a perfectly fine price tag. I also think Jonas is a decent candidate to bounce back after just completely flopping. I don't expect it to happen. I'm not even sure. They might have announced their stars ready for tomorrow. But if Tolliver gets a start again, and I expect him to, that's actually a bad thing for Jonas, because the way the Grizzlies rotation works is they have Clark kind of be like the backup five. And what they've been doing is been playing Clark and Deng in the front court together when Jonas comes off. And then Clark kind of gets that first run at the five when they go small to start the fourth quarter. And if this is usually when Clark starts next to Jonas gets that first, you know, 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. And those minutes are crucial. And so that's the difference between Jonas in like the 34 minute range to him being in like the 27, 29 minute range. And I like the spot here. I don't love what the Grizzlies rotation is. I think Jonas has GPP upside though. He always has a GPP upside. And he's going to be low on. It's a good bounce back spot for him. There's legit risk.
All right, let's go to the next game: Portland and Dallas. We obviously had Luka, Porzingis, DFS, Dorian Finney-Smith all out on Monday. Have we seen anything on them? Dallas, their seeding is interesting here in terms of where they're locked into the Western Conference. Do these guys play? It's rare to see guys rest back-to-back games, and although they had injury designations, we know they rested. But do we worry about, you know, Luka and Porzingis playing a little bit less in terms of minutes here? Other than that, Portland on the other side, they seem to be pretty much widely available. Whiteside probable with the hip strain.
Yeah, this is interesting. I expect Luka and KP to play first and foremost. I think we're going to see Dallas's normal rotation. We'll probably see like Barea sit, which whatever, that doesn't matter. We might see a Seth Curry sit also, but again, not the biggest thing in the world. Rick Carlisle is one of the most frustrating coaches to predict. He usually does the opposite of what you expect to happen. So far in the bubble, he has not rested Luka and KP in games they've actually played. I don't have minutes concern. Portland is an elite matchup. And this is really important. This is like one of the more important matchups on the slate. And you have to kind of make a prediction here. First off, always follow the news. Follow coaches' quotes. Like, hear what they're saying and shoot around. If Carlisle doesn't say anything about limiting Luka or KP, the stand I'm going to take is I'm expecting them to play their normal minutes. And if that's the case, Luka is the top overall spend-up target on the slate. The Blazers are just probably the best possible matchup. I don't know off the top of my head what ADVP says, but I'm sure it's all green, and I'm sure it's all 25 or plus better in terms of like what the Blazers rank against Luka's traits. The same can be said about KP. Both are going to go under-owned because people are going to want to play Russell Westbrook. And I'm not saying don't play Russell Westbrook. I think there's a chance you can play Westbrook, Luka, and Vucevic all in the same lineup and fit it comfortably. And if certain value goes a certain way, or certain news goes a certain way, I should say, that might be the approach I take and go fully stars and scrubs on this sort of slate.
Yeah, and by the way, Luka and the Blazers, 29th against dimers, 24th against primary ball handlers, 28th against scorers, 28th against crafty finishers, 27th against point forwards, 23rd against rebounders. They are, however, 18th against superstars. But yeah, it's an incredible matchup for Luka. The problem I have with this team, do you play anybody other than those two if you want to? Because we obviously saw a lot of them produce today. That's going to change, obviously, but at least we got Boban Day. That was dope. But yeah, is there anybody else from this team?
Not really. Yeah. The only argument I would say is maybe Seth Curry if he plays, but it's Luka or KP. I will say KP is an interesting pivot off of Vucevic. I'd expect Vucevic to carry heavy ownership and KP not to. KP is a strong pivot. Blazers are equally an elite matchup for KP, and he's slightly cheaper, I think. Yeah, he is, 8,200 compared to 86.
Portland, Damian Lillard coming off a huge game. Yusuf Nurkic has been fantastic, and he's been such an important player for this team. He's been unreal since returning. I kind of like him here against Dallas. He's 9K. Dallas has been such a bad post-up defense this year. They allow the most points in the NBA per game to the post at 7 per game. And Nurkic, since he's returned, he's fourth in the league in post-up points behind Embiid, Aldridge, and Jokic. You know you get peripherals with him. What do you think of Nurkic in this spot and the rest of the Portland team?
So on DK, I love the fact that Nurkic kind of has what Ayton has, and he has that forward eligibility. It's crucial. It makes it so much easier to target him. I love Nurkic. I'm prioritizing Vucevic over Nurk, but Nurk should be viewed as an elite target. I'm pretty sure Fast Eddie in his rankings will have Nurk as an A, as a GPP play. It's hard not to like him. The price is fair. His production has been awesome. He's looked awesome. He's also really fun to watch. Like, he's become like a Jokic-like passer,
yeah.
And no one really talks about it. You know, that was actually maybe a little bit of a hot take, but he's become a really good passer.
And Portland just has dudes that can score all over. Yep. Like Gary Trent shooting out of this world. We know Dame is as good as it gets. McCollum is still an incredible scorer. Melo's playing relatively well. Like they just have scorers around him too, which is nice.
Yep, and so I know I've been talking about minute security a lot. The team with the most minute security is the Portland Trailblazers.
Right.
Terry Stotts has said he's going to play these guys 40 minutes a night, and he has held true to his word there. You know, Dallas, last time I checked, was dead last when you combine primary ball handler and scoring traits. And, you know, that means this is an elite spot for Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. I think both are going to go under own again, because of Westbrook. If I had a gun to my head, do I have to play Westbrook or Dame? I'm going to say Westbrook, but Dame is
such a dope GPP play. And that's another reason the ADVP tool is so sick, because you mentioned the primary ball handlers and scorers. Dallas is really bad in those regards. But if you look at a lot of players will just look at that red eighth rank for Damian Lillard, yep, and be like, oh, it's not the greatest matchup, but it is a very good matchup for Damian Lillard. Don't get that mistaken. I love him. I love Nurkic. I think you can correlate them. They kind of remind me, not exactly the same, but like of the Jamal Murray-Jokic pairing. I love playing those two together because they correlate so much. And if these guys are going to be playing all these minutes, and assuming Luka and Porzingis play, I expect this game to be really competitive. Yeah, this is really enticing. McCollum has been so tough for me all year because his upside's really been capped when Dame's been healthy. He's going to have some really good games. But he's kind of like Chris Middleton when Giannis is healthy, because he's in that 7K range, that mid 7K range. Like, it'll be hard for me to get to a lot of CJ McCollum in this slate, but would I be surprised if he had a really nice game? Absolutely not.
Yeah, I'm with you. CJ's one of the worst guys for me to predict. I struggle with him. I say the same thing over and over again, and this is actually why he's such a good GPP play on every single slate, because most people feel this way. You see that price tag, you're like, okay, he's scoring dependent. I know he's good. I'm just like, I don't really want to play him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and everyone's going to say that. The fact is, like, CJ McCollum could also enter the gym in an elite matchup and put up, you know, 40 real points.
Yeah, and in those games where his shot is on, Dame has no, like, Dame takes backseat. He has no issue taking a backseat. Yeah.
And you mentioned correlation. So the correlation is you go kind of Dame Nurkic together if you're looking for a Blazer stack, or you do CJ as a standalone play.
Right.
You don't kind of play CJ and Nurk. It's possible, but I don't recommend it. And I especially don't really recommend playing Dame and CJ in the same lineup.
Yeah, I would never do that. Anything else? Gary Trent, is he going to hit 10 threes or something?
I like Gary Trent. I think he's really good. The minutes are great. This is a decent matchup. It's the right game environment. You know, he's fairly priced, but I like the spot. That's all I can say. I like this game in general. I think this is probably the best game environment on the slate. And that's kind of saying something when you consider Houston and San Antonio and that sort of pace. But this is the game that I think will stay the closest, that will be the most, will be played at the highest intensity, and probably end up having the highest total. I think this is a great game environment. And any, like, I'm really not against targeting anyone in this matchup. It's kind of like a cop-out answer.
Yeah, but even Melo. I mean, I mentioned how bad Dallas is in the post, and Melo's been posting up a lot. I like this game quite a bit. The minutes seem to be there for all these guys. Let's go to the Kings and the Pelicans. A lot of guys out here. Pelicans eliminated from playoff contention, so are the Kings. So, as a result, not surprising to see a lot of guys get ruled out on Monday afternoon. No Brandon Ingram, no Zion Williamson, no Jrue Holiday for New Orleans. And then De'Aaron Fox out. Rashawn Holmes, he's out again as he's legitimately injured with the hip. So, not only are a lot of guys missing, but there is a ton of usage to go around. Let's start with the Pelicans because Lonzo Ball has been a major disappointment since the restart. Maybe that's one of the reasons why the Pelicans have not, you know, lived up to what their potential could have been. But with a huge price drop at 6,400 with three huge usage guys out, is it hard not to get to some Zion here or some Lonzo here?
So, this is one of the tougher teams to kind of predict for tomorrow. Yeah. Because my first instinct is I love the Lonzo price. I love the usage and production bump that he's going to see. I also want to prioritize the two punts at point guard in Frank Jackson or Alexander Walker. I think both are going to see minutes, and I think both are going to be really, really strong values. If Alexander Walker is playing legit minutes, that's going to have an effect on Lonzo's production overall. If it's Frank Jackson, then I think Lonzo is an elite target.
Correct me if I'm wrong, this could be a situation where Lonzo, you know, plays his normal minutes in the first half, and then they just decide, okay, you know, we're not playing for anything. You can play, you'll play, and he plays like 5 minutes in the second half. Like, that wouldn't surprise me.
I don't think Lonzo's going to close this game. I was actually just going to say that. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to close with their bench. My favorite target, I think, is Frank Jackson. I'm pretty sure he's going to see 26 plus minutes, and he's been a pretty strong permanent producer. And the other guy would be Alexander Walker, who he does not really pass the ball. So if he's going to see 20 plus minutes at 3,200, sign me up.
Any Josh Hart? He's such a good rebounding guard slash wing. Should see more minutes here. He's not a huge usage guy, but any uptick in usage for him is great. And like I said, Zion, Ingram, and Holiday are huge usage guys. He's 41, and Redick's another guy that could easily just not finish this game.
So it's Hart and Redick are I think they're strong values. I actually just pulled it up. So with Zion, Ingram, and Jrue off the floor, Hart is a 0.92 DraftKings fantasy point per minute producer and 0.88 FanDuel. Redick is a really strong 1.11 DraftKings, 1.05 FanDuel per point per minute producer. I think people are going to chase Redick a bit here. The price is great. Don't expect another 46-point performance. I like him. I think the minutes are going to be there. But I kind of think we see Gentry go to that second unit and play a lot of the young guys who have not seen much time in the bubble for the majority of the second half. Hart might fall into that category, though. So I'm with you on the Josh Hart intrigue. Like, he's the guy who might see like 38 minutes and just play with both units, and he's going to probably get overlooked too.
Yeah, I have some interest in him for sure.
Really good price. Yeah.
I think he could get like 9 rebounds more in this game. Three-Twan. Love Three-Twan.
It's like, this is the Pelicans are maybe my favorite value spot aside from Alec Burks, and depending what some of the other Philly news breaks. But my value is likely coming from New Orleans, Sacramento, and we'll get to them in a second, and Philly.
Let's talk about Sacramento. No De'Aaron Fox here. Obviously, you know, they're already missing guys coming into the bubble with Marvin Bagley, who was pretty much hurt all year. Rashawn Holmes is now missing once again. I believe Kent Bazemore is also questionable. So, you know, De'Aaron Fox out. It's their best player. It's their primary ball handler. Corey Joseph should see an uptick. Bogdanovich has been playing pretty well as of late. Actually, really well as of late. And does this mean Buddy Hield could finally produce?
Yeah. So during the regular season when Fox got hurt, I was all over Bogdan and no one was playing him. It was actually, I think, the most profitable couple games I had before the suspension, where Bogdan was basically the point guard. He took over the De'Aaron Fox role.
He has the high assist rate on the team with Fox off the floor this year.
Yep. I'm not interested in Kojo. I get it, but I don't really care. He doesn't really provide the ceiling I'm looking for. Granted, he'll probably have 8 steals tomorrow and go for 50 because I just said that. I'm really interested in Bogdanovich. I think he's an elite target. Buddy, I feel like he's kind of in the doghouse, but like if there was a game to like unleash him, it's against New Orleans. We got to remember the Pelicans are about as an elite matchup as you can get in NBA. So all these kind of these supplementary kings that are stepping in or filling in for De'Aaron Fox, like they're incredible targets. And if the key for Buddy, in my opinion, is actually Bazemore. If Bazemore sits, it's hard for me to see how Buddy doesn't eclipse the 25-minute mark. The other guy we really have to talk about is Daquan Jeffries. He's 3,100. I think he'll probably see 30 minutes, and this is against the Pelicans. This is like he'll probably like fall into 4 rebounds, 3 assists, you know, a steal, a block, and like 12 points, and there's value right there. So I think Daquan Jeffries is someone we really need to consider, especially the fact that Bleach only played 5 minutes last game, so I don't really know what his role on this team is anymore.
And again, it's a team that's out of playoff contention. Why not? You already know what you have in Nemanja Bjelica. Like, you know, why play him 25 minutes if you don't really have to?
Yep. Yeah, sneaky GPP dart. Jabari Parker.
I always forget he's on this team.
I would not be shocked if he came into like the 18, 22 minute range.
And just when he's took in so many shots.
He played 12 minutes against Houston, put up 21 fantasy points. That's all I'll say. I think he can get there. It actually wouldn't even shock me if he got a surprise start. The Kings are dead. They've got nothing to play for. It doesn't really make sense why Jabari Parker is not playing, to be honest. So this could be the one, right?
Definitely could be. Let's close it out with Milwaukee and Washington. Should be a fast-paced game for sure, but who is going to be playing? We know Giannis was listed as probable at first on Monday with the toothache, then got ruled out. I'm sure, you know, the front end of back-to-back played a role. I mean, what do we do with Milwaukee here? Are guys going to sit? Are guys going to sit the second half of this game? Like, we know that, you know, they've been locked into that one seed. They don't really have anything to play for. The matchup is, you know, this is one of the best matchups in fantasy as well. But this is, like you said, on a slate where you really want to make sure you can project minutes, there seem to be other spots where we can safely do that. I mean, the one thing I'm terrified of, we mentioned Luka, we mentioned Westbrook, we mentioned a lot of the other guys. If Giannis plays like 34 minutes here, like, and people just don't play him,
yep.
I mean, that could be a huge edge.
So the one caveat to what I was thinking about Luka is if Giannis plays and Middleton and Bledsoe sit,
he don't have to play 25 minutes at that rate.
Like the other terrifying part about it though is like you see that you're like, okay, I want to play this. Like, why would I not play Giannis here? There's a good chance he just plays the first half. Yeah. Washington's the worst team in the bubble. This game means absolutely nothing. I kind of think we're going to see a bench game for the Bucks here. I think we're going to see Bledsoe sit. I think we're going to see Middleton sit. And even though it's rare, because I don't buy the toothache, I think this was just like a scheduled rest and they just used the toothache as the excuse.
Dude, I'm pretty sure he had toothaches multiple times this year. He's had tooth stuff before. I've seen it many times.
This is when we need Joe, right? He's the Milwaukee guy. He's the Giannis expert.
So I'm gonna ask Joe because I've seen Giannis pop up on the injury report with a tooth related injury probably 3 times this year. I swear I'm not making this up. So I'm literally gonna message Joe after we get off here.
I kind of think we see the Bucks regular sit. I'm fully expecting Brook Lopez to sit. If I had to bet money, that's the guy I would bet to sit. Then I would also think Bledsoe and Middleton will also rest. Would it be shocked if Giannis plays or doesn't play? He's the pivot. He's the GPP pivot. That's all I could say. And he's probably the best one. He can win you all the money. He could also lose you everything. It's just sort of like player fate and at your own risk at this point. If those guys sit, I think there's elite value on the Bucks against the Wizards. That's not much of a statement, but like guys like Pat Connaughton, even like Frank Mason, it wouldn't shock me to see him pick up like a good chunk of minutes here. This game means absolutely nothing. It's the worst team in the bubble that they're playing. Like people are going to do well. This game has like kind of track meet written all over it if the studs sit.
Does that make anybody on Washington more interesting? Because Milwaukee plays really fast. We know they're an elite defensive team, but there's a good chance they're just not going to be at that level this game with guys potentially sitting. They finally started to price Troy Brown Jr. up to 6K. He's just been so good in terms of peripherals, and he's still not like too highly priced. It's just, is he really a priority on the slate? You know, you have Thomas Bryant, who's played really well since the bubble, but do you want to pay $7,300 for him on the slate? I probably don't. I'd rather play guys like Valanciunas. You know, the other guys are a little bit more expensive, but, you know, I just don't see it really for this spot. Anybody in Washington? Shabazz Napier is questionable, but even if he sits, like $5,300 for Ishmith, no thanks. Talked about way too many guards at that price range or a ton of more at value.
So I'm off on Thomas Bryant too. He's been a monster in the bubble. The Bucks are just not a team I like to play bigs against. They cinch, whether it's Brook Lopez or his brother, their center is essentially a three-point shooter in the corner, and that's going to pull Bryant away from the rim, and that will affect his rebounding and defensive upside. So don't have a ton of interest there. I'd rather play Jonas at 7,200, like you said.
Yeah.
I am interested in Troy Brown Jr. if Giannis sits. That's a really good play. 6K is still a really fair price. It's still below. He's still priced at his floor, 5X's floor. And in a pace-up spot against potentially backups, we'll probably see Troy Brown stuff the stat sheet here at really low ownership. I actually disagree slightly on you about Ishmith. I think the price isn't great. I'm worried about the minutes because they weren't really there last game. Scott Brooks went with the second unit for the entire fourth quarter and just most of the second half. So there's legit risk there. Scott Brooks also did randomly say once that he wants to give Ishmith a full point guard game. He kind of hasn't had that. I mean, New Orleans was 32 minutes. So he said it after that game, though. But he does carry a legitimate upside. And if he's in the 30-plus minute range, $5,300 is a really good price for him, in my opinion. Now, if you think Ishmith is not going to play the kind of full game, Jerry and Grant's a decent punt at minimum price.
You'd still prefer Shake and Fultz over him, Ishmith?
Yes. Yes.
What about DJ Augustine? They're kind of like the same player almost.
I'd rather play Ish. Ish is like a ball hog. He doesn't really pass the ball anymore. It's really interesting.
He was on teams where he came in off the bench and had guys around him, but since he's been on the Wizards, it's just been like, Bradley Beal hasn't played for half the games and they don't have anybody else really. Thomas Bryant missed a lot of time, so he was like, I'm just gonna kind of take over here.
I was talking to my buddy about this today, actually, and he flat out said, he was like, Ishmith is the worst player in the bubble, and I disagree.
I like Ishmith.
I think he's a really good fantasy player. I mean, he's an awful defender. And so like real basketball wise, like you're not really going anywhere with Ishmith. I apologize, Ish, if you're listening. I'm a big fan though, and you're an incredible fantasy producer.
Who is the worst player in the bubble? There,
oh man. It's tough. It's a good question.
Who is the worst player? It's got to be somebody on. It's got to be like the guys that don't even play on Brooklyn now, right? Like
it might be Jared Utoff on Washington. I had like that moment. I was watching the game yet, like their last game, and I was kind of tilting a little bit because Ish wasn't coming back in. I was like, who is this other guy that's not Mo Wagner? And I was like, oh, it's Jared Utoff.
We're going to get out of here in a second, but could Washington be like someone interesting if they get their guys back and like they have Beal, they have Wall. I like Bertans. Thomas Bryant seems to be coming on. Like, I don't think they'll be a contender or anything, but I don't know.
I have no clue
what's going to happen with this team.
Me neither. I could see them blowing it up and trading Beal.
Yeah.
I could also see them not doing anything and kind of being a 6-8 seed. I don't think they're going far in the East. I think the East is stronger than people think. It's also much improved. You got to remember the Nets are going to be really good next year too.
Yeah, and that's going to be fun.
You know, yeah, and so I kind of think the Nets might get Bradley Beal. That's just a hunch. Wouldn't shock me.
Wait, so who would they give up? LeVert?
They have to give up LeVert, Allen, probably Joe Harris, and I don't know what contract they can give up. They have to give – who has – oh, DeAndre Jordan has to go.
Yeah.
But I think the Nets are a sneaky choice, a sneaky landing spot for Bradley Beal. I think – ultimately, I think they're just going to get traded. Otherwise, they're just kind of be – they're going to live in that mediocre 6-8 range in the East. But they have talent. I'll give them that.
For sure.
I like Thomas Bryant a lot, by the way. I think he's a legit center. He can shoot. Like, he doesn't really miss. He's a good rebounder. He's a decent defender. They have someone there with Thomas Bryant. So they have pieces. I don't think there's enough talent there to compete with like the big boys in the East next year.
For sure. Seven games. Hopefully the news doesn't get too crazy here on Tuesday afternoon. We got a lot of it here beforehand here on Monday night. But yeah, this is going to be the NBA the rest of the way here. I mean, you're going to have to really pay attention to the news, more so than usual, I would imagine. But of course, we have a ton of content at FTN daily. Stefano, can you, before we get out of here, talk about some of the stuff that they can find on the site throughout the day tomorrow in case they're just tuning in for the first time? I will say one thing you will see is my game-by-game article, which I will be publishing early in the morning or late tonight. But yeah, there's going to be a ton of stuff, and it's been – hopefully you took advantage of the free weekend.
So, yeah, absolutely. So, a normal day for a DFS player on FTNDaily.com. I'll say an NBA DFS player. This is how I would go about it. I would go listen to the podcast first, then read the breakdown. And the reason why I say that is I would say this podcast is more of an overarching kind of analysis of the slate, and then the breakdown will kind of hyper-focus that. The written article, I should say, the written breakdown will kind of hyper-focus that overarching analysis. Then we're going to start to see Kyle's ownership and projections start to populate. I would start taking a look at that. And then his player rater report, along with Tenacious D. Jones's GPP flagship kind of bank shot article that will come out. And if you don't know who Tenacious D. Jones is, he's a guy who basically wins GPPs all the time, multiple 100K wins. And he knows what he's talking about. Then, you know, we get to the really fun stuff. You know, as projections and ownership projections start updating, we get Fast Eddie Fears rankings. The chat starts blowing up. If you haven't been in our Discord chat, highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun. It's fast paced. You get a ton of like insight. All the news is there. And, you know, we answer all your questions. And then Fast Eddie's pre-lock stream starts. And he'll be on with Kawhisenberg tomorrow. The great Kawhisenberg, my favorite kind of DFS name in the industry. And they're going to break down all the late coming news. They're going to break down. They're going to do a brief breakdown of each game and who their favorite players are. They're going to break down news that comes, and you know, get you in a position to take advantage of leverageable moments on the slate. And that's the most important part with NBA. We need to react to news in a positive way. And if you do that, you're already ahead of the field. Just paying attention is the most important part about NBA DFS. And I highly recommend, you know, that final live stream and being available, even just to listen to it while you're at work or doing whatever you're doing, to then tweak your lineups. And then from there on, we're kind of in and out of the chat the rest of the day, going over, you know, late swaps, breaking down more news. And it ends up being a full NBA DFS day at FTN.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been hopping in the Discord a lot. Make sure you do that too. It's not even just for, you know, to talk to, you know, the experts or the analysts, but just talk to the other people in the Discord, because I've had a ton of great points brought up to me by the subscribers in the Discord that I wasn't even considering. It's just a good community that helps each other out. So yeah, make sure you are following Stefano on Twitter at Big Money Play. He is just a huge, huge cog here at FTN. Glad that he could take some time to join me. And honestly, we don't have much basketball left, but we still have enough. Whenever you want to come on this podcast, you are more than welcome. Joe will be back hopefully on Wednesday, and we will continue to break down however many slates we get. They're going to be a little bit more crazy than the next one, but like I said, as long as we got the news beforehand and you're paying attention, you should be fine. So best of luck on this slate. Have a good Tuesday. Hopefully you guys have some success here on this slate. We'll be back on Wednesday. Till then, we'll see you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.